Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got an email from Sarah listening on KTNF, AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. She said, love the church of collective bargaining idea. I would certainly become a parishioner, and I hope so, Sarah. I hope a lot of people would. It's a great idea. She said, if Erica Smiley's book is going to be the Bible, would the IWW's Little Red Song book be the hymnal? And I hadn't thought of it, but of course, yes. What else could it possibly be? What else could we possibly have as our hymnal but the song book? And look, this is not a work in progress. It's an idea I've had for years that I want to build that kind of, you know, that vision of power, that vision of solidarity, that vision of internalizing, viscerally internalizing, not just worker power, but citizen power in almost a blind faith kind of religious way. And while it was a kind of a joke, I actually kind of mean that we should have that kind of faith in each other. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on what I'm going to make as the official Bible of the Church of Collective Bargaining when we do it. And that would be the future we need, organizing for a better democracy in the 21st century. Last night we had Erica Smiley on. Tonight, the other co-author, Saruta Gupta, has so graciously joined us. She's also the vice president of U.S. programs for the Ford Foundation, as well as the co-author of the book. You want to check out the website, thefutureweneed.com. We'll get some links out on how you can do that. Saruta, thanks for taking some time for us.
Thanks, Rick. It's great to be here.
So love the book. Again, I think this should be mandatory reading for anyone who is a member of my soon-to-be-started Church of Collective Bargaining, because we do. We need to have some common direction, some common basis of how we move forward. And this idea of building worker power, citizen power, should be the beginning of it.
That's right, Rick. I love your idea of the Church of Collective Bargaining. I think that's amazing. And I'll just say that, you know, really, we wrote this book, Smiley and I did, because it would be so easy to see everything in this moment, all the actions and organizing that we see from Starbucks to Amazon to actually congressional staffers, by the way, as we heard last night happen, as just random acts versus the evolution of a worker movement in this country and a growing faith in what it means to join together collectively and make change. And, you know, Smiley and I really felt it was important to thread together lessons we've learned over the years and to tell a different story of how these struggles add up to forging a pathway to the future we need, one in which people can live, work, and age with dignity, with agency, and with joy in their lives.
No, and a big part of this moment, and why I think this moment is happening and the way it's happening, is, you know, all of those fights over the last, you know, 15 years. I mean, you go back to 2008, 2009, where we had a major crisis. We hadn't built the kind of organizing and the kind of the kind of mentality yet to really push and demand more. I think, Occupy Wall Street. I think what happened in 2008. I think, you see the teachers movement of the years that followed, the Red for Ed movements. All of those things built on each other to get us to this point to where we are now, where, people coming out of the pandemic who have been told that they're heroes and essential are now saying, you know what? You're right. I am essential. I am a hero. I did show up and now I demand better.
That's right. That is exactly right. It's such an inspiring moment that we're in right now. And our book really tries to illuminate this evolution, as I was referencing, learning from our history, but providing insights on the kinds of campaigns and efforts you just talked about. And most importantly, through the stories of worker leaders themselves, everyday people who are taking risks in their workplaces right now as we speak, and really learning from their experiences of really trying to join together with their peers, with their colleagues, negotiating for what they believe is dignity in their workplace, but then also being transformed by it and literally saying, actually, I want to be more civically engaged in society and our democracy as a whole. And that's what, the future really holds for us in this moment.
Yeah. Now, as you know, as my listeners know, I'm a labor guy. Most of my stuff is, labor organizing. I think the best way we change society, we change this country. We give people economic power. We, in the workplace, we demand better wages, hours, conditions, dignity, respect, all of that stuff on the job. But there are other ways of building organizing power, not just in the workplace. Again, if you have one tool and it's a hammer, my hammer is labor organizing. But there's much more than just that, right?
That's right. There is. And actually, in our book, we talk a lot about the different ways that we see workers building power today. There are new approaches that are taking root in a world in which the economy has dramatically changed over the last century. We see business, finance, and the economy has just complexified over the last century and continue to globalize and fissure, and all of which has eroded workers' rights and our public institutions. So now more than ever, the labor movement, our social justice movements have to be able to organize differently to really address this. And so we talk about three frameworks, three ways and approaches. One is really understanding who the real decision makers are in our economy today. And we reference them as the ultimate profiteers of global capitalism. So really getting beyond employers. Workers are caught in a shell game, I often say, Rick. If you're a worker at McDonald's or a worker at Walmart, you think you just go to your franchise or your store and you try to make change there, and you realize that they say it's not our decision, it's headquarters. And you go to headquarters who says it's not our decision, it's the franchises. And so workers are caught in a shell game. And essentially what we're seeing is workers are much smarter than that and recognizing that actually there are profiteers of their labor. And that's who we take the fights to, whether it's the big brands for garment workers. They don't go to the factories, they go to the brands for who they're supplying. Or another approach we see is using traditional bargaining to raise issues that are broader than what are considered permissible topics to the table, right? So bargaining for the common good. And you just referenced, Red for Ed, but all the teacher strikes are great examples of this. When we think about teachers in St. Paul, Minnesota, who really fought hard at the bargaining table to make sure that their immigrant students were not in fear of raids happening in their schools, or Chicago Teachers Union fighting for housing assistance for homeless students and families. And then the third approach we talk about is how we apply these frameworks of bargaining to other economic relationships that workers hold. And we lift up the ways in which workers can come together and negotiate with any entity that makes decisions over their lives, like employers and landlords and financiers. And so we lift up examples of tenants' unions or care workers and the care economy. I mean, my gosh, Rick, we're in a moment of this pandemic where suddenly people are recognizing there's a care workforce and that we really lack the kind of care infrastructure we need to support families. So we really try to lift up all these stories, but they're more than stories. They're actually giving us a path forward, that these are new and different ways to be building power today.
Yeah. And it's, and again, it's the kind of political power that we haven't been building in this country for a long time. And I would argue that it's hearkening back again to the era of my grandparents' generation, where they did build this kind of power. It's right. And I would argue, and you can correct me if you think I'm wrong, that this is, you know, a couple Reagan era-esque forward kind of hooray for the individual, you know, kind of pitting us against each other, you know, that has created this environment where, you know, hooray for me and the heck with everyone else kind of mentality that's put us in this moment. And we got a lot of work to do to get away from that kind of thinking, I think.
Absolutely. You know, Rick, another reason I was so inspired to write this book is my own story. You know, I didn't grow up in a union household as a child. My family immigrated to Rochester, New York, otherwise known as Kodak City. And my experience growing up, literally one town over from Kodak Park, which was the industrial facility, in a working class community where the majority of the kids I grew up with had family members who had worked at Kodak for multiple generations, has really shaped my thinking about unions and dignity and agency. Because throughout my childhood, Kodak, which was non-union, was downsizing, leaving many people in my community jobless or without the types of jobs that allowed them to sustain a middle-class lifestyle. And I literally watched the impact of this. It was absolutely devastating. And, you know, the 10-year-old me was trying to figure out, how is this possible? How can families who've worked for generations at a company lose their jobs and sense of security like this? And for many of my friends and their families, they felt and they continue to feel left behind. And that's the kind of divisions that we see in America today. There's growing anger and frustration. People feel left behind by employers and by politicians, and frankly, by our movements. And they've lost faith in our democracy and the role of government. And so this book is really about harnessing that back and saying people are feeling a lack of respect, dignity, and agency in their lives. And it doesn't actually have to be that way. We can change that. And that's what I hope this book will inspire in people.
Absolutely. The book, The Future We Need, Organizing for a Better Democracy in the 21st Century, written by Erica Smiley and Sarita Gupta. TheFutureWeNeed.com, the website. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at it. I think important read. And again, this is going to be the Bible at the Church of Collective Bargaining when we get that up and running. Now, in looking at this, and this is kind of where I want to finish this at, because we are a divided country in this moment. And I've been saying, you know, for years now, the only way I see us to come back together is to do what you just talked about. Give people that economic path forward, that path forward on, we're all going to be, you know, trying to make sure that families have a path forward, that this is the kind of stuff we should be talking about. This is where the Democratic Party needs to get their heads out of wherever it is and start being the party of the working class, and even Republicans, because there used to be pro-worker Republicans in this country. I don't know how they've lost their flipping minds, but this is where we as voters need to start demanding policies that move in this direction again. And I think this is kind of the beginning of having that conversation. So I'm kind of hopeful for this book to be maybe the catalyst that moves us a little bit towards that. Too optimistic, you think?
Not at all. I think that's exactly right. Look, this pandemic absolutely blew open the layers, the depth of inequality that we find happening in this country. Over the last 2 years, employers and policies have not been meeting workers' needs. And I'll just add, especially when it comes to women. I mean, during the pandemic, women have exited the labor force at twice the rate of men. And, you know, that begs a big question of why, right?
Well, because they were working crappy jobs before. I mean, look, you couldn't get me to go work in a service sector job to deal with people. Are you kidding
to
me?
To deal with
especially
people.
Coming out of the pandemic, we haven't figured out how to be around people, other people now. There is no way you would catch me going back to waiting tables or working in a bar. Forget that nonsense. Until people figure out how to be nice to each other again, I wouldn't do any of those jobs. And I don't blame women for not going back to it.
Well, but a big part of why women aren't going back is actually because we also lack a real care infrastructure in this country. We lack the supports that women and frankly families need. I mean, Rick, in the next 5 years, the Bureau of Labor Statistics tells us that working families are going to be caring for aging adults in their households in addition to children, right? So families are feeling the squeeze, workers are feeling the squeeze, and women are often the ones bearing the brunt of caregiving, which means it makes it really difficult for them to stay in the labor force and meet those caregiving needs. And all of that, we've had such a huge opportunity right now with the discussions about the care economy, the discussions on childcare and elder care to really change all of that. And I think to your point, you know, I think a lot of people reference this moment as the Great Resignation. I think it's more like a Great Awakening, where workers are really understanding and asking themselves, like, what is the purpose of work in my life at this moment? And they're also saying they want dignity at work. Workers aren't leaving the job force completely. We're seeing trends of people having two jobs now instead of three or four. The appetite to work is there, but so is the need to work with dignity. And that is what's going to fuel our movement
for and the reward for the demand for a reward for work. And I say, look, if we had union density rates where my grandparents were at 30%, we wouldn't see resignations. We would be seeing mass strikes everywhere. And I would to get back to that so that people don't have to go quitting, looking for other jobs or doing these idiotic gig economy jobs, which there's a whole nother organizing opportunity that needs to happen and very soon. But Sarita, I appreciate the time. Excellent book. I hope you do well with it. And I'd like you to come back again real soon and talk a little bit more about this, because this is really an important topic. And in fact, we're going to have to make you like honorary deacons or bishops or something in our Church of Collective Bargaining. You're going to have to be like the high priestesses of our church.
Happy to. I would love to come back to the Church of Collective Bargaining. Thanks so much, Rick.
Thank you so much, Sarita Gupta. Again, the book, The Future We Need, Organizing for a Better Democracy in the 21st Century. You can find that at thefuturewened.com or whatever local bookstore you use, just not the big A. Don't go to the A. I'll send you to Powell's if you have to go somewhere. Just not the A place. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any of the program thus far, make sure you grab the podcast. Never miss a second. Subscribe so you'd never miss anything. Share with your friends so they don't miss it either. Quick break, right back after this.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.